Please be seated. All right, this is the time set for argument in the afternoon session of the Southern Panel in Vicki Walters and Jerry Walters versus Shara Lynn Meeks, 53856. Are counsel ready to proceed?
We are ready.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before I begin, does the panel have any questions on me?
I'll bet you we find a few, but you might approach the podium and we'll let you warm up with a sentence or two.
Very good, Judge. Justices, I appreciate the opportunity on behalf of my clients to be able to address you today regarding this matter. I understand that we don't always get to have oral argument when it comes to these appeals, so from my perspective, it makes me think that this is a significant enough issue to actually be addressed, and I appreciate the time today. Essentially, what we have is an appeal from the district court with regards to a determination that my client's case should be dismissed due to a failure to computation of damages pursuant to 16.1. By way of brief background, there, the underlying case was a motor vehicle accident, a rear-end case, that we filed a complaint back in May of 2006. Ultimately, during the course of discovery, we were unable to resolve the case, so at the end of the case, we wound up filing a bunch of dispositive motions, including motions for summary judgment on both ends. there was a motion filed, albeit late, by the defendants, that a motion for summary judgment should be granted because plaintiff failed to compute their damages pursuant to 16.1. That motion went in front of Judge Bonaventure in November 28th of 2008, at which time he denied the motion, and subsequently we then went in front of the actual, who was going to be the ultimate trial judge, Judge Gadish, in February of 2009, to essentially address what we were going to do with respect to all the other motions, the motions in limine, and so forth. Now, somewhere along the way, and ultimately the decision was by Judge Kadish to dismiss the claim because in the court's mind, plaintiff failed to compute their damages pursuant to the NRCP 16.9. And briefly, and I know it's been briefed, and if you have any questions, please let me know, but essentially, what is required of either party in a case pursuant to NRCP 16.1AC with regards to a computation of damages is, and I'll read it directly, a computation of any category of damages claimed by the disclosed party, making available for inspection and copying, as under Rule 34, the documents or other evidentiary matter, not privileged or protected from disclosure, on which such computation is based, including materials bearing on the nature and extent of injuries suffered. Essentially, this case came down to essentially two disclosures made by...
Well, you've now arrived at the point where the reason for our invitation being extended to you has been identified.
Very good.
I understand there are some issues about whether your client ever complied at all with this requirement, but one of the things that the court is concerned about is how one interprets this provision and focusing in the words category and computation. There is a federal counterpart concerning this section, and under the federal rules, one approach may be necessary. The Nevada approach may be different in light of certain commentary. So one interest the panel has is how should we interpret this rule, particularly when you're dealing with, in personal injury cases, issues about computing pain and suffering, disfigurement, those kinds of damages, or is it limited to lost wages, out of pocket, medical expenses? How should the panel approach the interpretation of the rule?
And I appreciate that concern. And that sort of seems where the issue may have come into play that the court determined that we were not in compliance with it. If you read the footnote...
Well, my understanding is you didn't do anything. At least in front of Bonaventure, you hadn't done anything. I mean, you'd produce some bills and stuff, but you hadn't computed or calculated anything. Is that true?
That's untrue.
Okay.
What we have done during the course of discovery, and again, we only had two disclosures. The time of the initial ECC disclosure, what we did was we provided them with about 12 different sets of medical records and 5 different sets of medical bills for those medical records that we had in our possession. My clients are military, and a lot of their treatment was actually in Germany. So a lot of getting the bills and things like that we were unable to get, which we were fine with. We basically were going with what bills we had. The second disclosure came after my client had her cervical surgery. Those records were produced in our second or our first supplement. They were computed out to the point where not only did we provide the actual medical records themselves, but we also computed on each bill what, you know, the amount of each bill. So at the end of the day, what we basically had was, and if you read the rule, the damages basically are for the special damages, and the footnote specifically did not intend there be the need for a computation of general damages, such as pain and suffering, disfigurement, and everything else. So what we did during the course of this thing, and we believe certainly adhered to the spirit and intention of what this rule was, we provided all of the medical records, we provided all of the medical bills, we provided all the wage loss information. What we did not provide, and this is what actually became of one of the hearings, was whether or not we had to provide damage information with regards to the general damages, the pain and suffering. And again, in referring your honors to the specific footnote, the editor's note actually, it says, paragraph 1C, which is the one that we're discussing today, is intended to apply to special damages, not general or other intangible damages. So we feel, and again, these medical records and billings were provided at least a year before we even got to the dispositive motion portion of the case. And they were also the subject of numerous depositions, whether it came to the clients, whether it came to the experts, because we also had medical experts that also had all the medical records and billings that also commented on those medical records, the medical necessity, the reasonableness, as well as whether or not they believed that those medical records and bills were related to the accident. So we had all of this information that was provided to the defendants at least a year in advance of when we finally got down to filing dispositive motions. So it was confusing to me as the attorney when directed by the court or asked by the court, why didn't you provide them with the computation of damages for all of your damages, when it was my understanding in reading this specific rule that we did not have to provide a computation when it came to the pain and suffering. As a matter of fact, I even asked that question at the last hearing. Your Honor, do I actually need to provide what my number is going to be at trial to ask for my client's pain and suffering? And that's when the court indicated that I may have to. And that's when I specifically referenced the rule.
That was Judge Bonaventure.
No, that was actually Judge Kadish at that point.
Okay.
Judge Bonaventure, with all due respect, I don't know how much criminal or how much civil work he had done to know what this specific issue was, because I tried to explain it to him as well. And when he basically said was just whatever the rule says, provide that information to them. And that's when I indicated that that has already been done through the various ECC disclosures and supplements. So that's sort of the case in a nutshell. And then, of course, when we got in front of Judge Kadish, that's when that discussion again had occurred about these the general damages and whether or not that information had to be provided. But
I understand her order, she sanctioned you or your client and struck the complaint or dismissed the case based upon the failure to comply with the Bonaventure order. Is that right?
That is, I think.
In other words, she didn't reassess the merits of your interpretation of the rule.
I believe there was a difference of what was ordered by Judge Bonaventure with regards to this issue. And again, as I tried to implore upon Judge Kadish, all of the general or all the special damages information has been provided. And as we sit here today, Judge, this is back at the hearing with Judge Kadish, are you requiring me to provide the special damage or the general damage information, because that was not ordered by Judge Bonaventure, because simply that doesn't fall within what is required, I guess, according to the footnote.
Counsel, the record seems to reflect that in this discourse, the court asked you whether or not you had provided information, and you basically said, well, I didn't think I had to give the court a single number. And then the position was I've given them is three or four separate documents which list all the medical expenses, but I didn't know I had to sit there and add the total amount of those medical expenses up. That seemed to be the discourse, and the court took issue because that was your prior response at the previous hearing, and they basically said, hey, you didn't do what we asked you to do.
Well, again, with all due respect, Judge, what I interpreted Judge Bonaventure to want me to do was to, again,
did you give them a single number or some type of, I don't care what it was made up of, but did you give them a number or did you just give them documents?
I had given them the previous documents.
But no number as requested by the court?
And again, that what...
Did you give them
no,
a number?
I did not give them one specific number, Judge. What I did was I had broken down all of the medical expenses in the disclosures as to what all of the medical bills were. That's all we were asking for.
Didn't the court ask you to give them a number, though, previously?
That I don't recall. What I do recall is that I was asked to give them the computation of damages.
What I have in front of me says the court asked you, did you give them a number? And your position was, no, you didn't. Is that correct?
I don't, if it's what's in front of you, Judge, I don't dispute that. I don't specifically remember being asked to give them one specific number. I just remember being asked to provide them with the computation of damage information. And again, there was a discourse about whether or not the general damage information was to be included, because they had already had all the information for years prior, that I wasn't going to rely upon anything else. There was only one number that they already had specifically for Mr. Walters, which was only a wage loss claim of $182,000. And that was testified through deposition as well as in an email. So there was no other damage information for Mr. Walters. It was only that and the specific medical information for Mrs. Walters. So.
And so what you're saying is that you provided the dollar amount on the bills you produced.
Yes.
And there were no documents to be produced with respect to the wage loss claim.
Correct. There was an email from the individual that was going to hire Mr. Walters for a military position that was produced at the time of the initial ECC, and there was also information testified during Mr. Walters' deposition which confirmed that that was the amount that he was to make of this.
All right. So your contention is that the sanction here failed to take into consideration the extent of the requirement of disclosure under the rule concerning computation or calculation for pain and suffering and disfigurement damages.
Right. I believe that all of the special damage information had already been produced well in advance in accordance with this rule, which basically indicates you have to make that information open for inspection and discovery. And it was all provided to them. It didn't have to even be in my office for them to come over. It was actually given to them, and it was also, again, given to experts throughout the case. The only thing is that there was no general damage information because that would be for the trier of fact to decide according to this rule.
Mr. Schwartz, did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal, or did you want to make another point in your remaining time?
The only other point I would make, Your Honors, is that the actual order itself that came from Judge Kadish, the order on motion for contempt and dismissal, references, and I put this in my brief, about 18 other matters that were never even addressed at any hearing, because they all specifically dealt with motions in limine. No motions in limine were discussed with Judge Bonaventure. No motions in limine were discussed with Judge Kadish at any hearing. But when I got the order had all of these additional things that the defendants believe that perhaps the plaintiffs did, but were never adjudicated, were never discussed, were never even remotely referenced in any of the hearings that we had.
Were they in the moving papers?
Excuse me?
Were they in the moving papers?
There were motions that were filed that were never ruled on. So they were in some of the moving papers, but we never addressed any of them.
Did you respond to those allegations?
Yes.
So the court had it for consideration?
It was never even...
That wasn't what I asked.
Okay.
You responded. They
yes.
alleged, so the court had something for their consideration.
I would
their,
believe...
Their statements?
What happened, Your Honor, is it's not that clear. What had happened was that they made the allegations, but it was after the fact.
Does the court have to have an oral argument on everything, or may the court take it under consideration, counsel?
The court can do whatever it wants, Your Honor, and I certainly respect the court for having that authority and ability. I'm just saying I never got a chance to respond to any of those things.
Did you respond in writing? That was your opportunity. You did. That's at least what you just told me.
What I did was when they filed their motions, I filed my opposition. We never had the opportunity to respond in writing to these specific elements because we never had the hearing that we had was solely about the motion for summary judgment. It was not about these other issues. I want to thank you for your time again, unless there's any other questions you may have.
Any other questions?
Okay.
All right, thank you, Mr. Schwartz. All right.
Good afternoon. My name is Jen Sims, and I represent Shara Meeks in this matter. She is the respondent in this case. While the appellant highlights one issue in this case, as submitted in our respondent's brief, we see actually three issues in this case. One being whether or not the opening brief and appendix were so inadequate and inaccurate and substantially under-inclusive that they should not even be considered. That issue basically goes to the under-inclusion of Judge Kadish's transcript. It was not included by the appellant. And also the transcript from the hearing by Judge Bonaventure was not included. In addition, there was no summary submitted. So the court actually has no evidence as to what occurred at the Bonaventure hearing, even though appellant's counsel has represented what he believes occurred. The only evidence that this honorable court has is the notice of entry of order and order, which required appellant's counsel to produce a computation of damages within 30 days of the hearing, of Judge Bonaventure's hearing back in November of 2008. So that's
counsel, just as we're talking about that, it seems from what we have, there was substantial compliance with the request for information from the party. And the question I guess I have just openly is, the sanction that may appear to be draconian, was it appropriate since you had the basic information even though it was not computed?
Well, we submit that the sanction was appropriate. The sanction does not only contemplate a violation of one section of 16.1, it also contemplates the violation of Judge Bonaventure's court order. Now, the word computation certainly means both under the federal Rule 16 and under our 16.1 rule that you have to set forth categories of damages. What's often done is people set forth medical specials, lost wages, and they add it up into one number of the special damages that they are seeking. That was never done in this case. It was not done before the hearing in front of Judge Bonaventure, and it was not done after, even though Judge Bonaventure...
Ms. Sims, do you concede then that under the Nevada rule, a plaintiff in a personal injury case is not required to provide computation for pain and suffering and disfigurement damages?
I would agree, Your Honor, because that's what the advisory committee notes say. But unfortunately, for appellant...
So your complaint or your dispute here focuses on the fact that the plaintiff failed to summarize and total their out-of-pocket expenses.
He failed to produce anything entitled computation of damages containing a category of each of the damages that he was seeking. What he has attempted to do in front of Judge Bonaventure, Judge Kadish, and in front of this court is to say, look at all this I produced. It complies. But a lot of that was not produced pursuant to 16.1. And in general practice, what you produce pursuant to 16.1 is most likely what you're seeking at trial. And he did not produce a computation of damages pursuant to 16.1.
Did he table the damages in the med records and produce that on the face of the med records? In other words, did he add them up and calculate them in that form in some sort of tabulation?
What he did, Your Honor, is on some of his lists of witnesses, it will say, it said the medical provider and then next to it a number, but there was never a computation as to I am seeking X in medical specials, I am seeking Y in lost wages, and there was no document filed even after Judge Bonaventure's order entitled computation of damages. But this case is even about more than that. We have the 16.1 violation. We have the violation of Judge Bonaventure's order, and in addition, the 27 violations contained in Judge Kadish's order. They were briefed. They were briefed in our motion for order to show cause and dismissal, and they are discussed in Judge Kadish's transcript, which we provided the court as part of respondent's appendix.
Was there ever a motion, just a plain motion to compel, a Rule 37 motion?
No, Your Honor, there was not. What we did file is we filed a motion for summary judgment based on failure to calculate damages, and that was heard by Judge Bonaventure. And then he said, well, I'm not going to act on this now. I'll give you 30 days to supplement what's required by the rule. And there was no supplement. And then, so that
did you meet and confer with your colleague before filing that motion?
We did not meet and confer, and while Rule 37 requires that, 16.1 does not require a meet and confer because it's a mandatory rule pursuant to Mays versus 8th Judicial Court. So it's a mandatory rule. He's required to follow it. A meet and confer is not required.
Ms. Sims, one of the things that I was concerned about is that Judge Kadish's order imposing the sanction doesn't appear to me to discuss at all the willfulness of the plaintiff's behavior, the extent to which there would be some other sanction that could be imposed to address the failure to comply with Judge Bonaventure's order, the severity of dismissal as compared to the alleged abusive conduct, particularly in light of all of the other productions that had occurred. Is the absence of those evaluations important to whether we should affirm or reverse this sanction order?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that pursuant to Arnold versus Kipp and Young versus Ribeiro, those considerations might be required. However, we are dealing with a situation where there was a violation of the order of the court. So this court, while looking at Arnold versus Kipp and Young versus Ribeiro for guidance, the violation of the court order takes this case out of that sort of analysis because...
Well, I guess I'm confused then. Did Judge Kadish enter this order under Arnold versus Kipp because it's a 16-1 violation? Or did she enter this order because it's a Young violation?
Well,
the order doesn't say which.
Well, the order doesn't say which, but the order concentrates on the violation of Judge Bonaventure's court order.
Which would sound like it's a Young evaluation, which would require the court to address the Young factors in deciding to dismiss the case, wouldn't it?
Well, this is a violation of 16.1, so since Arnold versus Kipp dealt with a violation of 16.1, we see that as guidance. However, we're dealing with the violation of a court order. And as listed out by Judge Kadish, several violations of rules and orders of the court. For instance, no timely opposition was filed to our original motion in front of Judge Bonaventure, and no timely opposition was filed to our motion for order to show cause and dismissal. So on that grounds alone, the court could have granted our motion. So,
well, I find it interesting some of the things that are listed here. Failed to file the plaintiff's motion in limine to exclude the defendant's expert, Dr. Anthony Servistini, not less than 5 weeks before trial pursuant to EDCR 2.47. Wouldn't the response to that be denied? The doctor testifies?
Well, that is not one of the...
Well, that's one of the 18 enumerated bases of the plaintiff's failures that caused the dismissal of this case.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. However,
that's what was in your motion that nobody talked about but got incorporated in the order. So we're now going to throw somebody out of court because they didn't file a motion in limine on time to exclude your expert, which you can then bring.
Well,
that seems a bit harsh, doesn't it?
Well, based on that one violation alone.
Well, there's about 1, 2, 3 others here where he didn't file the motion in limine on time to get rid of your doctors. I would think those would just be denied and the doctors could testify.
Those aren't the violations that are dispositive in nature, but I agree with you. Standing alone, that may not be enough. However, we have enumerated 17 instances of rule violations, including the violation of a court order.
So your argument is that the plaintiff was impeding the prosecution of the case?
Yes, Your Honor, with serial and serious rule violations. And Judge Kadish looked at all of the many violations. In addition, she's looking at this prior court order and asking appellant, have you done anything since then? And his response is, well, I did all this before. Well, no, but have you done anything since November 2008? No, he had not. And so he is clearly in violation of that order, and he cannot stand behind his own confusion about the rules as an excuse for not complying with a court order. And if you look at the transcript from Judge Kadish's hearing, that appears to be what is happening. He's asking the court to explain to him how he should have complied with a rule back in November 2008, and the hearing was in February of 2009. So we would ask the court to affirm Judge Kadish's ruling. The only case cited by the appellant was Price versus Dunn, requesting a trial on the merits. And we would distinguish that case for several reasons. One, it was a termination of parental rights case. And so it's different than a car accident case. In addition, the relief that the father in Price versus Dunn received from the court is that he was able to participate in the case. He was not served with Rule 4 service of process, and the court said it's not fair to have your parental rights terminated. You can participate in the case. But as the appellant in this case, after that point, he certainly was required to follow the rules and orders of the court. And if the father in Price versus Dunn had not followed the rules and orders of the court, he may have ended his case with his rights terminated in any event. Pursuant to the cases of Esworthy, Moore, Walls versus Brewster, Haley versus Eureka, we would submit that.
Counsel, with that recitation, couldn't they have been left, though, to just general damages only, and they couldn't have come forward with these special damages as an appropriate sanction?
They would have to prove they would have to comply with 16.1 and the court order.
I want to return to a comment you made earlier about not needing to meet and confer prior to bringing a motion for sanctions with respect to a 16.1 computation of damages disclosure and ask you to address Rule 37A2, which says this: if a party fails to make a disclosure required by Rule 16.1A or 16.2A, any other party may move to compel disclosure and for appropriate sanctions. But the second sentence says the motion must include a certificate that the movement has in good faith conferred or attempted to confer in an effort to secure compliance. The question I have here is, why not call up opposing counsel and say, you've given me all these medical records. What I really want is a statement of each category of special damages that you're requesting and a dollar total for each of your special damages. You don't believe that that's incumbent on you as the movement under the discovery rules?
Well, Your Honor, we do not want to encourage or assist in litigation against our client. Our reading of the rules is 16.1 says must and shall, so it's a mandatory requirement. In Rule 37, if you may enforce 16.1 or Rule 26 by a meet and confer, but you are not required to do so.
All right, are there any other questions by the panel? All right, thank you, Ms. Sims.
Thank you.
Counsel,
holidays.
We appreciate your arguments here today. The case will stand submitted, and we wish